This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Oh! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the WWE Podcast for this Monday Night Raw review. But it's Tuesday. That's April 16th, 2024. We were going to have a co-host, but that co-host has been move till this weekend, and that's not a bad thing because Sunday's our most downloaded show, and with technical issues, I think it's actually a better place for him as Thomas Franco, who was going to join us, who attended Monday Night Raw in Montreal last night, was originally going to do tonight. He'll be pushed to this weekend on Sunday night's show, the biggest show of the week for our weekend review, and get his in-person perspective on everything that happened in the show and get a live feel for what it was like to be in Montreal as Sami Zayn main event of the show and took on Chad Gable for the Intercontinental Championship or defending his Intercontinental Championship. And we all know what happened. Something that I don't think is particularly shocking for a lot of us, as many of us kind of saw at some point Chad Gable turning, and it was a really good turn as Sami was hugging his wife, and that's the moment that we had Chad Gable decide to take out Sami Zayn. And I think a Chad Gable heel turn is the biggest moment of his entire career, even beyond the excellent matches he had with Gunther, who has also gone into hiding. We get a fun version of Gable. We're going to get to see what Gable's like as a heel. I don't know if he's ever, I mean, he has an Alpha Academy, but more of a just kind of tongue-in-cheek, non-serious type of heel, where this is going to be a little bit more fun, a little bit more deep, and we get to see more Sami-Chad matches. Now, Gunther's likely going to come back. I would assume that he's going to insert himself last second or after Backlash, immediately following Backlash, to make it some kind of triple threat and add that element to things. I don't think they're going to elevate Gunther just yet to the world title picture. There's some items there that need to be wrapped up in the current scenario with, of course, Damian Priest and his new opponent, Jey Uso, who's going to be taking him on a Backlash. So there's still time for Gunther to make it to that level, and it's going to be a fun ride. I think when he does get there, it's going to feel like a big moment, and I'm in no rush because I understand the value, and I'm sure many of you do too, in Gunther, what he can do, what he's capable of, the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. There's a lot that we love to look forward to, but before we get there, I'd like to thank you everybody for joining us here on the show as we continue to grow, continue to make this show bigger, better. I don't know if badder is a word because I don't want the show to be bad. But nonetheless, thank you everybody for joining us as we are, again, growing because of you. And over Patreon is the best way to support the show. If you don't want ads and you want to be able to contribute to the show and say thank you, patreon.com/WWE podcast. Apple also is another great place to go as we offer subscriptions there. So let's get into, again, the nitty gritty of Monday Night Raw. And the show opened with Rhea Ripley, who, boy, I mean, you talk about having the momentum stopped out of nowhere from an injury that was caused, of course, by accident from somebody that accidentally injured her in Liv Morgan. And I have to say, as untimely as this seems for Rhea Ripley, as untimely as it seems, and it feels like things are just getting going for her, this may be, if you're looking for a silver lining, the best thing that could have happened to either Liv or Rhea. And that's not to any slight on Rhea or, I mean, even Liv for that matter. But Liv is now an automatic heel. Maybe the most relevant heel on Raw right now in the women's side of things. She is overnight with an accidental injury caused to Rhea Ripley, one of the most, if not the most relevant heel on the women's side of things on Raw. Fans are going to look at her as the woman that took out Rhea, that the reason we don't get to see Rhea is because of her. Conversely, when you look at Rhea Ripley, who is just getting going in her women's championship run. I think that this could be a massive moment in her career when she returns. Because when she returns, presumably around SummerSlam time, which also feels like a lot of other possible return times when it comes. I mean, think about this, guys. But between the injury timings of Charlotte, who is scheduled, I would think Charlotte's going to be back in the next month or two. I mean, she looks like she's progressing incredibly quick. But the Charlotte injury took place. CM Punk's injury seems to be not too far behind. Now we have Rhea Ripley's injury, which may time out just in time for SummerSlam. On top of The Rock, who's slated to come back around that time, from what I'm understanding. So everybody seemingly in the next 3 to 4 months could be back from injury, setting up for a massive SummerSlam, which could lead, yes, all the way to WrestleMania 41 already, believe it or not. A lot of times stories do jive or start at SummerSlam and go to that WrestleMania. So as depressing as this may be for a lot of you Ripley fans out there, and I'm one of them, despite the criticism I've provided to her of her social media posts and that she's leading a women's sexual revolution part two, which I think she inadvertently or advertently is, it all is the same, whether you put a label of women's empowerment on it or not, it still is in a lot of ways bringing women backwards when it comes to the progression they've made thus far. She's still the hottest woman in the company. I mean that in a professional sense. And I think that she has, despite the recent push for her outfits and her Instagram posts and everything else, she was on the rise before she did any of that because of her pure skill in the ring, her presence on the microphone. She has succeeded in spite of that. So it's why I'm critical of her using those things as of the last few months, because it's not needed. But it does hurt the women's division with her not there. I like the new hair. It changes things up. You know, she was growing it out anyway and then put extensions in, and I think it looks good. And I don't mean that from a way of, wait a minute, you're talking about her looks and you said don't talk. No, of course we can see them. It just comes to a point where it's just explicit to the point of being distracting, you know, and there's also some criticism over Sheamus. We'll get to that and his weight gain. We'll talk about that next. But Rhea Ripley comes out at the beginning of the show and is saying, you know, you guys know what's up. And lots of mommy chants. Thank you, mommy chants. Saying that she's been told she has to relinquish the championship. And I think that, you know, the fans obviously are very upset about this. And we got Liv Morgan coming out and, Rhea Ripley bringing up Liv Morgan's revenge tour and called it stupid. She said she could have had some respect for Morgan had she done it face to face, but she was blindsided. Then she issued a warning to whoever wins my women's world championship. She said, when she comes back, she's coming for blood. I like that. Really good line. Really good line. Effective, believable, and also believable considering the fact that for the first time in a long time, we saw blood spilled on Raw a number of weeks ago with The Rock doing that to Cody infamously. So believable, and Rhea Ripley is a believable character to say that, so I like that line a lot. And Liv Morgan comes out and has security. Like, you know, apparently it takes 5 full-grown men to hold back 115-pound Liv Morgan, but I understand the visual, right? You know, it's and also Rhea Ripley is still encouraging Liv to come down. And both women are being held back. Rhea Ripley ends up headbutting one of the security guards. And no physical altercation happens between Liv and Ripley. But it does set the stage for a nice return for Rhea when she does return. Now, I still don't know and I haven't heard the timetable. It does seem like it's based on Cole's comments of a few months. That would say 3 to me. If it's more than 3, that would be, you know, disappointing. In my mind, that's why I'm aiming still for SummerSlam, but it could be longer until we see the official report come out and we hear from WWE. I mean, I don't, outside of Cole's comments, I don't have an actual timeline beyond SummerSlam. So it could go beyond that. But then after that, we got Sheamus's silhouette being shown And it was cool because at first I was like, who the hell is this? You know, it took me a second. I'm like, oh, that's right, Sheamus. And Sheamus comes out and it was really cool to see him, I have to say. He faced Ivar, an 8-minute match. Sheamus was really over with the crowd, hit the brogue kick on Ivar. Really well done. The white noise on the top rope was impressive as hell, given how big Ivar is. Just a fun welcome back match. And the crowd was seemingly very much into him. But now there's, you know, beyond the fact that he looked good in the ring, he seemed like he hasn't missed a step. And the fact that he's got his old music back, which is a nice, you know, that kind of stuff tells you that it's the WWE does listen. They may say that they don't pay attention to the noise on social media. They're lying. Of course they do. If they didn't, they wouldn't tout all of their social media stats every chance that they get, right? So of course they listen. Of course they hear what the fans are saying collectively. And one of the things they were saying collectively is, let's bring back Sheamus's old music. And I love it. I have to say, Sheamus's old music brought me back. Brought me back to the old days. And hearing the stat also from Cole, who just is such an addition to Raw. I mean, Cole is just, you know, when Cole's gone, we're going to miss him. I know that the heir apparent of Corey Graves is being groomed to be the next Cole, or at least take Cole's spot. But Cole doesn't get the respect he deserves. But my point about this is that he put out a nice stat saying that Sheamus was with the company for 17 years. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, the guy in the next few years is coming up on 20 years in the business. And I think he's a Hall of Famer right now. Now, how they divvy up Hall of Fame nominations and everything else is not up to the fans, but of course up to Triple H and management. But I think he's a deserving candidate based on the qualifications that they have kind of put forth unofficially. So Sheamus is back, and beyond the music, which was great, the match, I wouldn't say it was great, it was just exactly what it needed to be, is Sheamus's weight. And I did notice, it was very noticeable. Was he fat? No. Did it look like he put on probably 20, 25 pounds of body fat? Yeah, probably. I would say he did get bigger, and it's not muscle. It's clearly fat. But here's the thing. I'm not going to sit here and talk about be better humans, be better people. If I hear that phrase one more time, I might lose it. That's such a soft, sanitized 2024 version of people saying things that other people don't like. So they label it as be better people. Shut up. First of all, I'm not going to sit here and say it's body shaming. If you are in the public eye and you are voluntarily in the public eye, receiving a very good salary to be in the public eye, criticism comes with the territory. If you don't want to hear negative criticism, you're in the wrong business. You need to go to a place that there is an expectation of privacy. So I wanted to say that off the bat. I'm not going to sit here and say we should be better people and stop body shaming. Hell no. I will say that from my personal opinion, it wasn't that big of a deal. It was noticeable. Am I going to sit here and hammer him for it? No. I had somebody on Twitter say to me, well, it's their job to be in shape. Oh, really? I think Kevin Owens, I don't know, Ivar, who we saw in that match, Vader, the Great Khali wasn't in great shape. I mean, there's so many guys that did not have a six-pack that went on to be successful. I mean, the Great Khali is debatable. But my point to saying that is it's not their job to be in shape. It's their job to wrestle. It's their job to entertain fans at home and in the building. It's their job to be safe. You don't have to be a six-pack muscle freak that has, you know, 2% body fat. A lot of guys like that have come and gone. It's not their job to be in shape. It's their job to be safe and be able to perform whatever that looks like. Okay, so that said, though, again, I didn't have a problem with it. I will say that if people are making fun of him for the weight gain, Well, then you might want to go up and down the roster for men and women that aren't in shape. I mean, you think people would say the same thing about Nia Jax? Yeah, now we're getting into a little more sensitive territory. We're not talking about women that are overweight. Now, Nia Jax is overweight. She just is. That's all. It's just a fact. But she's using it to her advantage. It's a differentiator for her. It has actually helped her career, albeit with a cost, at a price. She has knee problems. Why? Physics. You put more weight and pressure on your joints, they are more apt to blow out. So there's a price that comes with that, but she has done a nice job. And look what Nia Jax has done over the last several months. My God, I mean, I know lately, over the last several weeks, she hasn't done anything, but prior to WrestleMania, she was one of the biggest surprises in the company. And putting on really good matches with Becky Lynch, getting involved with Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan, cutting decent promos. So my point about bringing up the weight thing isn't here to sit here and play moral compass with you. It's to simply say, who cares, right? Who cares? It is noticeable, yes. I'm not going to sit here and go, I don't know what you're talking about. No, I saw it. He put on a good 25 pounds of body fat. But you know what? We all fluctuate in weight. And if he comes back and kicks ass and is better on the mic than he was ever before and he's with his old music, who cares? That's my message, right, is that. But at the same time, when you're in the public eye voluntarily and then you whine and complain about people that notice things on you, then you're in the wrong business if that gets under your skin. Find another profession, right? So anyway, let's move on. We get R-Truth and Miz coming out. Well, excuse me. Triple H comes out. And Cole said the Triple H era is here. So I guess we have all landed because of Triple H's, or rather WWE's heavy-handedness in, I guess they have decided what this era is going to be called. Fine. Again, fine, we're in the Triple H era. It's been defined. It seems like WWE is sitting there going, you know what, the fans seem to be unsure what era we're in. Let's tell them. Okay, fine. We're in the Triple H era. I have no problem with that. And then Cole was weirdly adversarial against Adam Pearce in the ring, who called him a middle management stooge. I mean, I don't know what his deal is. I don't know what the beef is with Pearce, but... So we got a lot of cheers for Triple H. It seemed very loud in the arena. I'll have to ask our co-host on Sunday exactly how loud it was. And Triple H said, it's hard to believe that it was only 8 days since they were in the midst of the biggest WrestleMania of all time. And said, kingdoms fell, nightmares began, and a new era started. I wonder how long he thought about that line for. I mean, that's clearly a prepared line. You don't just come up with that on a whim. With all those puns. Right? Imagine me sitting here and somebody asks me, hey man, how was WrestleMania? Like, you know, just in casual conversation. And I'm like, you know, listen, you know, kingdoms fell, nightmares began, and a new era started. Think about how ridiculous that sounds. I mean, it's a line that I have no issue with because it's in pro wrestling context, but it was just clearly prepared. That's all. Anyway, I mean, no slight on Triple H. He did a hell of a job for his first WrestleMania. I give him nothing but props, despite the fact that they couldn't come to a financial agreement with Stone Cold Steve Austin, which still gets under my skin, yes. Undertaker did have closure. And by the way, if you didn't check out the Undertaker's 6 Feet Under or 6 Feet Deep podcast that he does, he talked about what that meant to him to have that moment at WrestleMania as kind of a true closing of the door of his career. While he did the Boneyard match or the Graveyard match, whatever it was called, with AJ Styles during the pandemic, and that was the last match of his career, to him, you know, he always felt that there was something that was eating at him and he didn't have proper closure, and this seemed to do it for him. So kind of a cool deal. While we didn't get Austin, which still torches my ass, we did get The Undertaker, a legend in his own right. You know, hearing the gong did surprise me. I remember sitting there, and I actually said, I didn't cuss like some of my other co-hosts, but I just, I went, oh my God. I go, what? That's what I said. Because I'm sure you were curious as to what I was saying. But the whole point of me saying this is that it was a hell of a WrestleMania by Triple H. Nothing negative I can say about Triple H regarding WrestleMania outside of course, you don't like Cody, but that has nothing to do with Triple H. So, okay, moving on. We got the Raw Tag Team Champions, which will soon be now known as the World Tag Team Champions. I like that. Nice cohesiveness throughout their many titles they have in the company, right? You have the WWE Champion, the World Champion. I think we've now removed Universal. There's no more Universal Undisputed WWE Universal Heavyweight Champion. That whole thing, that whole, you know, very wordy title is gone. I think we've landed on WWE Undisputed. The Undisputed WWE Champion, fine, great. And we've got the World Champion with Damian Priest. Now we've got the WWE Champion of Bayley, WWE Women's Champion of Bayley, and the World Champion of Rhea Ripley, which has now been vacated. And then we've got the World Tag Team titles with R-Truth and The Miz. And I would presume the WWE Tag Team titles that the A-Town Down Under team is possessing on SmackDown. So I like the symmetry throughout the different sets of championships. Makes it easier to understand. Instead of, wait, how was it Raw and SmackDown, but this one's a World and this one's WWE, right? Which is kind of funny. Not to split hairs, and this is not a complaint, just an observation. They're disseminating between WWE and World, right? For the tag team titles, the women's championships, and the top men's championships. But what does WWE stand for, folks? Right? World Wrestling Entertainment. You forget about what that first W stands for? So I'm not splitting hairs, but it's kind of funny. I guess it's supposed to imply that the WWE Championship is just company-wide, but in somehow the world title is worldwide, yet WWE is worldwide, and even the word world, that's a tongue twister, is in the name of WWE. Kind of weird, right? Or maybe I'm thinking too deep into it. I'm sure some of you will let me know. All right. A You Deserve It chant broke out for Truth and Miz. They kind of went off the rails a little bit here, I know that Truth is trying to be funny, and he generally is, and I didn't hate this segment, but it felt a little bit forced, and they went a little bit too long. But Truth thinking that Triple H is Tommaso Ciampa and Tommaso Ciampa is Triple H and calling Triple H a crafty little genie was really funny. Triple H was trying to hold his laughter back. So that was fun. And we did get The Miz giving R-Truth his flowers, deservedly so. And Pierce insulted R-Truth by saying, if you know, the people that have brain cells or something. I mean, it was kind of a weird insulting night. Now, I wouldn't read too much into it, but it was just weird that he basically said that R-Truth is stupid in so many words. But Pierce announced that there would be a triple threat to determine the number one contenders for the tag team titles. That triple threat match would be next. So we got DIY, Johnny Gargano, and Triple H, i.e. Tommaso Ciampa, versus the Creed Brothers versus the New Day, in a triple threat to become number one contenders for the World Tag Team titles. And the match was really good, as you'd expect, albeit a little bit short for my liking, given the talent that's in the ring here. And it did come down to to DIY getting the victory in about just under 11 minutes. DIY wins, and we now have a DIY Awesome Truth tag team title match set up for Backlash, of which I fully expect, at least for now, Awesome Truth to remain champions. I don't think it's going to be past SummerSlam that they're champions, just because of R-Truth's age, and they're trying to, you know, push newer talent and all that, and we want to give Truth at least a few months to be champion. So I think when you look towards SummerSlam, or even in July, the July event, you could be looking at your first chance of R-Truth losing. So enjoy Truth while he's champion. I mean that sincerely, because in our lifetimes, we may not see Truth holding any kind of championship again. So at 52, the dude deserves it. He is just a joy to watch on TV. I don't think, got a lot of the moments he deserved throughout his career. He got it at WrestleMania 40, and I'm very happy for him. But boy, would I love to see him challenge for a top title. Not a long run, but the crowd would go bonkers. Okay. We got Drew McIntyre laughing as he watched footage of last week where CM Punk screwed him in the number one contenders match. Jackie Redmond was interviewing him, and he ended up kicking the television with a claymore kick or something, and he stormed off. So that's all we got from Drew. And this is kind of the drawback of promoting a program they can't deliver on until Punk's healthy. Now, I mean, you can have Punk, you can have Drew here and there come in and talk about Punk, but you can only go so far before you're like, are we going to get this match? You know, and Punk can only talk so much before you want to just have the match. And so that's just the drawback. You know, I don't know exactly what day or PLE they're aiming for where Punk could return, but it's just one of the, I guess, the glass half empty type of view on it. Is, you know, we're going to get a lot of teasing and a lot of reminder video packages, but it's going to be a sparing kind of build until we get to the point where Punk's ready to return. All right. Maxine Dupri and Ivy Nile versus Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. Indy Hartwell and Candice LeRae win after beating Maxine and Ivy in 3.5 minutes. And the finish was Hartwell throwing a kick at Dupri and then threw LeRae on top of her while the referee was distracted. The referee turned around and made the three count, and Cole said it was the first time that Hartwell seemed to be on the same page as LeRae. So Hartwell has officially joined LeRae on the dark side here, and we have a heel team. So, okay, I guess that's where we're headed. All right, Cole said that Damian Priest is the first Puerto Rican-born WWE World Champion in over 50 years, and photos were shown of Priest posing for a photo with the New York Yankees star Aaron Judge at Yankee Stadium. Big Yankees fan. Not just me, but Damian Priest. And then we did get Priest, who was inside the Judgment Day clubhouse, and Valor told Priest that their focus should be on getting the tag titles back and questioned why he was facing Jey Uso. All right, so let's continue here. We got Andrade versus Dominic Mysterio, where Andrade beats Rey in 8 minutes and 40 seconds. Dom performed what McAfee called a This Country Destroyer on the apron. That's a weird name. Dom then got Andrade back in the ring, covered him for a near fall. Dom kicked Andrade into position for the 619, but Andrade caught him with a back elbow. And Andrade hit the message finisher and got the victory. And then JD attacked Andrade after the match. And Dom held Andrade while McDonough threw punches at him. And Ricochet, who's our resident superhero, I guess, I don't know if he's still calling himself that, but he rushed out to chase the heel duo off. And Ricochet and Andrade shook hands. So, okay. Andrade needs some help here. You know, like, he comes back, big moment at the Rumble, kind of like Naomi, but no follow-up plan. Now, you could say, well, he's involved in the storyline here. He's involved with the Judgment Day, or, you know, which is true, but you can put yourself physically in something, but if you're not emotionally in the fans' minds and hearts, it sounds corny, but it's true, then, you know, I think you're missing the bigger picture, or what's the most important. And again, I'm not hammering WWE on this. It's not a failed storyline yet. I just think that things could be improved for Andrade if we got more of an understanding of who and what he is, and maybe even a video package of his past in WWE. You don't have to go into AEW. You could ignore that if you want, and I'm sure they would. Don't want to give free promotion. But Andrade needs some help from a character development standpoint in a big way, because the fans just don't know what to do with him yet. So, all right. Jey Uso was interviewed backstage, and then Chelsea Green and Piper Niven come out, who face Caden Carter and Katana Chance. Now, Chelsea Green and Piper Niven beat Caden Carter and Katana Chance because we got Niven breaking up a Carter pin attempt by hitting her with a running crossbody block, and then Green covered Carter for the win. So Chelsea Green gets a victory. But here's the deal. I mean, these women's matches, tag team matches, I have no issue with them. In fact, I have been kicking and screaming for more women's tag team matches to at least try to make us believe there's a true division of women for tag teams and justify the tag team titles. But these matches, I mean, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, you could say, well, look, there were two women's tag team matches. True, yes, but collectively, they were 5 minutes long. I mean, that's just Roman's entrance alone. You know, I mean, so like, fine. Yeah, you did. And I don't even know if Vince was around still, we'd be getting even this much time for the women. So it is I don't know if it's a step forward or a step sideways or a step, like a half step forward, maybe. But I just want the women to get more time. It literally is just, it sounds oversimplified, but the women just need more time, just time. And sure, what they do with that time is important. I'm not saying just giving them time is that'll fix everything. You don't have to be very strategic and maximizing your minutes. But it's almost not even minutes. I mean, it's not even almost plural. It's almost just minute. You know, maximize your minute. Almost. Now, am I asking WWE to give these women's tag team matches 15, 20 minutes? Hell no. No. I think that actually would be too long. And not because the women couldn't wrestle, but the fans' attention span and dedicating 40-some plus minutes to women's tag team wrestling is probably not something that would appeal to the crowd as a kind of a whole. But I think that just there needs to be more character development generally. And Chelsea Green has it. Luckily for her, her and Piper have this chemistry that's unmatched and probably unplanned. And Chelsea Green is brilliant in what she does. But no one even knows who Caden Carter and Katana Chance are. I mean, for real. They just don't. Or if they do, they look at them and go, okay, yeah, two kind of pretty athletic girls. And they can wrestle. They're okay. But they don't have any emotional connection to them. Tell me anybody that feels anything for a Caden Carter and Katana Chance match. I mean, any emotion. No one is sitting there going, oh my God, I hope they win. I hope they lose. Oh my God, I hope they, you know. No, nobody. Nobody. And why should they? It's no disrespect to Caden and Katana, who I think are good. But if you don't know who they are and you can't resonate with their character or understand who and what they are and why you should care, then it doesn't matter who's in there. That's all. It's not me whining, complaining. I don't think anyone would disagree with the fact that the women just generally need more time as a whole. Okay, moving on. All right, so Liv Morgan was interviewed backstage by Kathy Kelly, and Morgan said she didn't understand the negative reaction. She said her revenge tour would end with her becoming the women's world champion. You know, as I said at the beginning of the show, this is one of the best things that's ever happened to Liv's career. And if you're going to cash in on an accidental injury, this is the way to do it. Because Liv has become a heel instantly, a heel that you actually care about and want to see get her ass kicked. It's a good thing. Again, Liv has been too cutesy, I think too easygoing. Generally, I know she's been on this imaginary revenge tour, but now it actually has some teeth because she accidentally injured Rhea Ripley in what was her target and purpose of the whole revenge tour. So kind of ironically, she has done the thing that in storyline world she was trying to set out to do, which was injure Rhea Ripley. but her revenge tour continues. And you know what? Like I was critical of the revenge tour. I thought it sounded stupid. Because she was targeting everyone but the person she said she created the revenge tour for leading into WrestleMania. But I'm on board for this version of Liv Morgan. I can get on board for the more edgy, the more don't give a F attitude. That is a version of Liv Morgan that I can actually get invested in. So we'll see how long that continues. But I would imagine she's not going to get cheered for the foreseeable future. After what she did, of course, accidentally. And, you know, there's some blame to be with Rhea, too. Nobody meant to do it. But when you slam yourself into a concrete wall is going to win. All right, we then get Cody Rhodes, and the fans sang the Olé song. Can someone explain that to me? I mean, I'm from the States. Is it a soccer thing? Is it a hockey thing? Is it a cultural thing? Is it a Canadian folklore? I mean, like, what is the Olé thing? Because I hear it all the time. There's international crowds. Anyone outside? Like, I very rarely, not never, but very rarely hear it in the States. What the hell is the Olé song? I mean, I'm honestly just too lazy to Google it. So I'm sure some of you are like, how do you not know? Just, I don't want to Google it. I'm too lazy. I'm half asleep right now. So it's late at night. But that said, I mean, why? I mean, even after you tell me what it is and that, like, oh, well, it's usually done through this sport, that sport, in this stadium. My question is, why though? Like, why is it done at wrestling events? What's the significance of that? What's the connection there? I don't get it. I don't hate it. That's not me sitting in complaining and moaning about it. No. I'm just genuinely asking, like, what the hell is this? And why is it done at wrestling events? Genuine question. Someone will answer in the mailbag, I'm sure, and make fun of me for not knowing what it is and call out my laziness because I just can't use my fingers to type into Google right now. So sure, I'll take the hit. All right. So Cody asks as usual, just now here's where some complaining may happen. So buckle up for those sensitive people that may have their tummy hurt because I have an opinion about Cody you don't like. Strap in. Here we go. Cody asks his usual ridiculous question that no one can answer because it's a terrible question. You don't ask rhetorical questions to an audience. It's stupid. All right, but Cody said that he's now officially a SmackDown star and told the crowd not to worry because he's not going anywhere. No one was worried about that, Cody. In fact, that's a new. Now, I know the draft is in a couple weeks. I understand. And there's a lot to talk about there. But no one assumed you were a SmackDown star, nor did we think, oh my God, security's going to come and pull him away and tell him, no, you belong on SmackDown. That'd be a hell of a time to do that when throughout the entire year since the draft was implemented last year, there have been countless violations of the draft on both sides. From Raw to SmackDown, SmackDown to Raw, with no explanation, no caring to even tell the audience why this person's here or even acknowledging it. So no, Cody, see the damage that the precedent has set where WWE can't even adhere to their own rules for more than a week? Now, maybe things will change under Triple H, but Triple H has been one of the biggest offenders over the last 6 to 12 months. And to me, it's just either have the draft or don't and abide by the rules or don't. But they want to be able to have the draft and also have a combined roster when it's convenient for storyline. So I don't expect things to change under Triple H. I don't. However, no, Cody, by the way, he's wrong that he's a SmackDown star. You want to know why? Because people are drafted, not championships. So no, Cody, you are not on SmackDown. You're not a SmackDown superstar. The championship is not drafted there, pal. People are. When they do the draft, is there a candidate in which, okay, in the first round, we're going to take the World Heavyweight Championship? No, you take people. Therefore, people supersede the championships. Wherever the person goes is where the championship goes. Now, of course, they always split it as they should evenly. It always, quote unquote, happens to land that way, but it should. Oh my God, Cody, please. All right. It's not going to get any better. So if you thought I'm done complaining, sorry, I'm not. We got more. He said that he couldn't celebrate WrestleMania forever. I would agree with that. And talked about facing LA Knight or Styles at Backlash. He said Cody said they could reflect a little bit. He said there was a man he could talk to for hours and then a man that would be his shield. And the crowd started chanting for Seth. He wanted to talk about a thank you for Seth. It's interesting. Becky, Seth, Gunther, Roman have all gone into hiding since post WrestleMania, and I actually have no issue with that. It gives everyone a chance to breathe, see new talent, and learn to miss all of them. And I'm sure I miss more talent that's just gone after WrestleMania, but those are just a few. So Rhodes said The Rock did some reflecting yesterday, and Cody said it was news to him that The Rock did a 10-week training camp and flew people into spar. He said he doesn't think Rock has one more match left in him. He thinks Rock has a lot more than that. And he said that Rock claimed he would make him bleed again, and Cody said Rock is probably right. Maybe he will, but no amount of training or preparation could stop the fact that if he's going to bleed, Rock's going to bleed with him. Cody said he was confused by what happened on SmackDown with the Bloodline because Tama Tonga arrived and yet Roman was nowhere to be found. And Cody introduced Jey Uso and Pat McAfee stood at the broadcast table and pumped his arms. And Cole said McAfee would be useless the rest of the night. Anyway, Cody noted that Jey is the number one contender for the world title and no one deserves it more than him. Cody said Jey helped him finish the story at WrestleMania, and Cody said Jey was about to wrestle Finn Balor and the rest of the Judgment Day wouldn't be far behind, so he offered to help Jey. And Jey declined, and Cody said he understood that Jey didn't need him and needed to do it on his own and wished him good luck. And he was trying to be cute and said one more thing until we yeet again. He sounded like, I mean, Mr. Buttoned Up, right? He feels so out of place, even though he's my age. I think he's 38, 39. He sounded like the old uncle trying to use modern language that the kids use. Did he not? He sounded like, because he just says it in a way that you just know he never actually says it. He says the word and pronounces it in a way that doesn't even sound cool. He sounds like an old dad or an old uncle trying to use current language to sound cool. I mean, he just does, even though he's my age. But I know there's so many terms nowadays that I don't even understand. I know what they mean now, but when kids say that slaps, you heard that one? When the kid that slaps, I guess that's awesome is what it means. That's what it means. Bae obviously means, you know, your bae is your boyfriend or girlfriend. There's other ones. No cap. That's been a big one, which I learned is that there's no lie. There's others. But anyway, it's probably a topic for another After Dark show. So he just continues to be a dork. A dork. He's a dork on top of many other things. His character, the person Cody Runnels, sure is a very genuine dude. Because you can't fake that through the camera, usually. All right, Nia Jax was interviewed backstage, and who asked what Rhea relinquishing the championship means to the division, and Jax says she doesn't give a damn about Ripley and the title is hers. Cool. Short, sweet, to the point. So Nia Jax is actually a very heavy favorite, I think, to win. I think there's a very real possibility that we have a Nia Jax title run in the near future. But, of course, we'll have to look at the field as things get closer to, who could win that championship and how they're going to lay it out and that kind of thing. All right. We then have Jey Uso versus Finn Balor, where Jey Uso beats Finn in just under 7 minutes. Jey went for the spear and then hit his top rope splash and scored the victory. So, solid technical match, or as technical as it could be for 6.5 minutes. And after the match, Damian Priest, this is obviously a little bit more, I guess, juicy, right? Damian Priest comes to the ring. He went face-to-face with Jey. Priest held up the belt. JD and Dom attacked Jey from behind. Balor joined in and attacked him, and they sent Jey to ringside. And this is where Jey hopped the barricade, and the camera followed Jey, who slapped hands with fans, and even shove a dude who wouldn't get out of his way. Good for Jey. There was some some guy that was just in his way on his phone trying to be a D-bag. I don't know what it was. Jey deserved, obviously he knows every movement he makes is being scrutinized. It's on camera on national television. You can't do too much. But he did shove the guy out of the way like, bro, get out of my way. Don't be a D-bag. So good for Jey on that one. And whoever that fan was, I mean, don't be stupid. Don't be stupid. All right. But at the end of the exit, he found Sami Zayn just staring upward, and the crowd popped big for that. And Sami said this would be the first show he ever saw, or rather, this was the building he saw his first show ever in, and he returns a champion, and he wants to walk through the front door just as he did all those years ago. Very, very nice kind of heartfelt symmetry. It's very poetic for Sammy to do this. And he entered, and the crowd went crazy, and as they should have, and sang along his song, and it was a cool moment. You know, it was just anytime Sammy gets in front of the Montreal crowd, it's just a fun feeling, and it brings back those feelings of Elimination Chamber from 2023, when he nearly beat Roman Reigns, and still I think should have. Yes, I still think he should have, but another rant for another day. But Sami Zayn versus Chad Gable for the Intercontinental Championship was next. It was our main event here on Monday Night Raw, and Samantha Irvin does her thing, as she always seems to do, in a brilliant way, and delivered an in-ring introductions for the competitors for the Intercontinental title match. And she just has a big fight feel to her. You know, I really just her voice is, it's something, man. And we get a really fun match here, 17-minute match. Some of the moves looked, oh my God. I mean, I was looking at some of, I think there was a German suplex into the turnbuckle from Gable to Sammy. There was also a German suplex where you saw Chad literally land on his head. And I'm like, oh my God, are we just, guys, please be careful. I mean, you're just sitting there, and it's very unnerving with some of the things they can do, but also it's just mesmerizing. The chemistry these two have is unparalleled. I mean, this is if you ever wanted to do an Iron Man match, a true 60-minute Iron Man match again, these two are your front runners. I don't think they ever will, at least. Well, I shouldn't say never. Triple H is a different dude than Vince is. I would say that it's probably not being discussed, but if they ever wanted to go down that road, here's a great matchup for you to potentially have a 60-minute Iron Man match in Chad and Sammy. I also don't think that not only Triple H, but they'd be hesitant to do it, but I think he'd be hesitant to do it because today's society can't think about something for more than 45 seconds, much less 60 minutes. So I think the fear would be that's a hell of a long time for people to be focused in on one match. But the Royal Rumble's that long. Granted, there's a lot more people in it, but there are matches as long or longer than 60 minutes in WWE. But a lot of fun here. Ankle locks, the Huluva kick. Zayn did go for the sharpshooter, but his ankle gave out. And the finish was Zayn rolling out of an ankle lock, Chad Gable charging him, who hit him with an exploder suplex, and then Zayn hit the Huluva kick, fell over, grabbed his ankle, and covered Gable. No kickouts of finishes. Hallelujah. So Sami Zayn wins. Chad Gable pretends to be happy for him. There's only like a minute left in the show, so you're thinking, oh, maybe, okay, well, yeah, I guess they could close the show. Nothing big's going to happen. And as Zayn is hugging his wife, wham, German suplex, slams Sammy into the corner, into the ring post, into the ring steps, and then puts an ankle lock on him again as Zayn is in pain in front of his wife, doing the very thing that he said that was damaging to him, Chad, making his family cry, making his daughter cry. He's now doing that very same thing to Sammy in front of his family. So you have hypocrisy on top of sore loser in Chad Gable. And I think you have the recipe for a fun Chad heel run. This is going to be this is going to be a blast, I think. So again, heel turns are always fun. This one was somewhat predictable. We just didn't know when it was coming. Chad is positioned in a nice place to be the heel here. As Sami Zayn continues his babyface run, and after beating Gunther, which eventually he will come back to. Eventually Gunther, I think, is going to make a massive return. Could be next week, could be after Backlash, could be after Backlash. But between Gunther gone, Rhea gone, Becky gone, Seth gone, Roman gone, they can't be gone forever. But it is nice to see other stars get an opportunity. And that's what I think this is. It's everybody take a collective deep breath and let's reset. Let's give other stars a chance to breathe. You guys go repair your brains and your minds and your bodies, and we'll be back, you know, we'll link back up in a month or longer. You know, obviously Punk goes down. I mean, there's some big names right now that are just missing since WrestleMania. So just a lot of fun to still be a fan here, guys. You know, in the Montreal crowd, you guys, as always, killed it. As always, you guys killed it. And I just want to give you props. And again, you know, apologize for the technical delays that that did not allow us to have a co-host here tonight. But we will be able to get together this coming weekend as we are quickly approaching that, and we'll be able to have a weekend review with our co-host to talk about wrestling, talk about his in-person experience. I don't think he got in-ring, but Thomas Franco will join us Sunday night, the weekend review. And until then, guys, I appreciate all of your support. If you want to continue to support us, head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. Go ad free. You can get a shout out on the show. You can come on the show even. And you have an exclusive show that you get on the After Dark side of things when you go up in tier. So check that out. Also check out Apple Podcasts if you want to have a little more of a convenient way and you like your Apple Podcast app. Great place for it. So that's it for me tonight. Thank you so much, everybody. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWEpodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.